Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Paul Tatino, I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513. If you want to get involved in the program, give us a call. We're not going to take your calls probably till around 12:30-ish. We're going to have Gene Deckerhoff, who does play-by-play not only for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but also the Florida State Seminoles. He'll be joining us in about 3 or 4 minutes to talk about the many prospects coming out of Florida State. A lot of guys in the offensive side of the ball this year, when in the years past has been mostly defensive players coming out of Florida State. So we'll have that in a little bit. In preparation for the spot, Paul, I watched a couple of Florida State games from last year.
Okay.
I watched their game against North Carolina and then a game against Florida later on. And it's funny, what I was looking for specifically was Dalvin Cook, because I think he's fascinating. If you take a look at his measurables at the combine, no running back with those measurables has ever, period, been taken in the first round of the NFL draft. And he ranked something in like the 16th or 17th percentile of running backs that have come out of the draft in the last 10 years. So those numbers are terrible. I mean, for a running back, his combine numbers were terrible. But at the same time, he was extremely productive. Mm-hmm. Excellent player. So I looked at the tape, and this is what I saw. After looking at the tape, I wasn't necessarily shocked his combine numbers were as bad as they were. And here's why. He's not a guy that's going to start and stop and be super explosive coming out of cuts. He's not going to, you know, get to the sideline and turn the corner with 4.41 speed and do that sort of stuff. What Dalvin Cook's really good at, what makes him a good running back, is his patience, it's his vision, and it's his shiftiness in the hole to manipulate his body just a little bit, whether it's a spin or just a slide left or right, that's going to help him break a tackle or gain an extra couple yards. So that stuff isn't necessarily going to show up in the combine measurable. So after I watched him, I wasn't shocked that his measurables were as poor as they were. And to me, at least, while it would be a concern, it wouldn't be a quote-unquote red flag for me if I decided I wanted to draft the guy, because what I saw from him on tape, I still think he's going to be a great player, even though he maybe didn't blow up the combine the way a lot of people thought he would.
Well, you know what's interesting, John? We heard a lot of mixed reviews on him out in Indy. Some people had him going really high.
Some people love him, some people not so much.
Some people not so much, yeah. And, you know, for me, and I happen to, the other word that I would use when you talked about him a second ago was balance.
Yes. That's another really good one.
And you can't really test someone's balance unless they're carrying a ball and someone is hitting them. That's when you really see if somebody has great balance.
Yeah, he's a really good football player. He might not be an elite athlete.
I agree.
But he's a really good football player, which I thought was interesting.
For me, I look at him and I say he would not fit the Giants' needs in their backfield very well.
Well, to me, he would play the same role that Paul Perkins would play.
And that's why I personally would not take him at 23.
Now, the counter-argument to that, and I'm with you. You know my opinion on taking a running back in the first round. But I'll play devil's advocate here for a second. If you believe he's that much better than Paul Perkins, and you believe you'll go from a 12, let's say, if you think you're going from an 1,100-yard back or a 1,000-yard back
to a
1,500-yard back, is that worth the price of admission?
Not if you're going to use a three-headed backfield like I'm anticipating.
But you're not going to if you draft Dalvin Cook
in
the first round.
No, that's the point.
It's going to be a two-headed back.
Correct. You're now going to change your overall philosophy because you're going to want to take advantage of the numbers you think he can give you.
Right, because you're going to want to feed him 20 times a game. He's that good.
If you feel that strongly about him, yes. I don't know that I do. And you know what, folks? No, we're not going to know for 3 years.
Well, you know, running backs, you know, quicker than that.
Yeah,
honestly,
that is true.
You don't see many running backs come out be terrible in their first year and then blow it up. I mean,
usually they don't sit very much either.
Melvin Gordon,
if they're going to play, they're going to play.
Melvin Gordon made a pretty good jump from year one to year two, so he, I guess, would be one of the exceptions to the rule. But running backs will usually come in, and if they're going to be good, they're going to be good right away.
Oh, look what Howard did.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
Chicago.
Came right in, and you either get it or you don't. You know, I think he's going to be a good pro. I'm not so sure that he's going to be a great pro. That's a gut feel, John. It's a gut feel.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, look, Paul.
It's all a crapshoot.
And we'll be with Gene Deckerhoff in a second. All these picks, late first round, You can get a guy that can be a three-time Pro Bowl. You can get a guy that's never going to make a Pro Bowl.
Yeah. That's just I know.
It's just the way the NFL draft goes.
I know.
201-939-4513. That's the phone number for you. We'll get to your calls in about 20 minutes or so. For the time being, though, we'll be joined. And thanks for watching on Twitter, if you're watching on Twitter, by the way. Go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app if you want to listen to the rest of the show there and listen to our guest, Gene Deckerhoff, who joins us right now on Giants.com. Gene, you got John Schmelk and Paul Dottino here up in East Rutherford, New Jersey. How is it down in Tampa? I got to imagine it's a lot nicer down there than it is up here.
Well, yeah, I think it's raining in your neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah.
It's bright and sunny. I live in Tallahassee, about 4.5 miles from Tampa, 4.5 hours from Tampa. And,
oh, wow.
The temperature is probably a little bit warmer in Tampa, not much. A cold front came through last night. They had heavy thunder showers, and that brings the cooler air behind it, and it's just very pleasant. 64 degrees, a blue sky, not a cloud in the sky. It's lovely weather as we get closer to the NFL draft. I'm excited to see what the Bucs are going to do with 19. I have no clue. Last year we had some success with our first pick and our second pick. Obviously, we went defense last year with the first and second pick. Don't know if we're going to go defense again this year. Jason Light's played it close to the vest, our general manager.
You know, Gene, let me ask you one question about the Buccaneers before we get to the Florida State stuff that we wanted to talk to you about. I heard someone on Sirius today, one of the obvious draft nicks and gurus, and we know there are a dime a dozen of those guys. But the one guy today was talking about Tampa as a likely landing spot for Njoku, the tight end out of Miami, who obviously has a lot of people up here in New York excited that maybe he could drop to 23 in the Giants. Are the Bucs a likely landing spot for him?
Well, I believe, if I can interpret the tweets and the updates, that he's either working out this morning or worked out yesterday afternoon. So what does that mean? Well, every day leading up to the draft, the Buccaneers staff are working out players, prospects, draft prospects. And Njoku is an interesting guy. I watched him play for 3 years for the University of Miami. Miami's had tremendous success at that tight end position. It doesn't matter whether it was Jimmy Johnson coaching as a head coach or Al Golden, they've just had tremendous success with tight ends, and you see you see former Hurricanes as tight ends all over the league, and that's an interesting prospect. The Bucs are very happy with Cameron Brate, by the way, who just has found a niche as the starting tight end, and Luke Stocker is the blocking tight end. Dirk Cutter likes to go with two tight ends most starting lineups to begin ball games. So those are the two right now, and you bring a tight end with talent. I mean, you know, we drafted Austin Seferian Jenkins a couple of years ago, but he didn't quite fit in. He got in some trouble, got suspended, and the Bucs released him. And he's playing in the league. He has all the talent in the world. I mean, he looked like a tremendous prospect, but he just didn't fit in with the Buccaneers for some reason. No, I wish him well in his career. So the Bucs might be looking at a tight end, but I think they're happy with Cameron Brate and with Luke Stocker. But we'll wait and see. That 19th pick is a very valuable pick, as you guys know. And do you go running back? Do you go defensive? Again, do you go wide receiver? There's been a lot of speculation. Some of the outstanding wide receivers, a kid out of Washington is coming out, they're trying to get a compliment to fit with Mike Evans. And you get somebody, DeSean Jackson, a tremendous free agent acquisition, because he gives Jameis Winston one more weapon. And good golly, if you get one more receiver with speed that could really stretch that backfield, you got a chance to be a real efficient offense. And, you know, Jameis, 4,000 yards first year, 4,000 yards last year, first quarterback in the history of the league to pass for 4,000 yards and back-to-back his first two seasons of the league. So you give him another weapon at wideout, good golly, he might pass for 5,000 yards. We'll have to wait and see. But 19, hey, right now, I stopped doing mock drafts about 10 years ago because, you know, why even speculate? You can throw out names. John Smith's going to be the 15th pick of the draft. Who the heck's John Smith? Well, that's just as good a guess. That's just as good a guess as anybody else. But Njoku, I'm glad he came out early because I tell you what, Miami with Mark Richt down there as a head coach, having a great recruiting, got a couple of 4-star, 5-star commitments the last couple of weeks. Got 10 starters back on defense. He started a lot of rookies last year. We don't need him having more weapons down there to beat myself, you know?
Gene, I hear you. And, you know, I want to follow up real quick. Just one more Buck question before we get to the Noles here.
Yeah.
The Giants play the Bucs next year. So, obviously, you want to get a feel for the opponent. What are the expectations in Tampa this year? You know, we already saw a bit of a jump from Winston's first year to his second year in terms of not only, you know, his numbers, but also the team's record. Is it playoffs or bust next year for Tampa? Is that where the expectations are for fans, that they believe next year should be the year that they leap into that real big playoff conversation?
Well, it's 2017, and that means it's been 15 years since the Buccaneers won the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 37. It's been a ton of seasons since the Buccaneers last tasted the playoffs. So, yeah, that's on the agenda. The Bucs fans expect a run at the playoffs. If we can figure out a way to win our division, let's face it, the last couple of years, Carolina went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago, Atlanta last year, New Orleans has won a Super Bowl, the Bucs have won a Super Bowl. I think the NFC South is right up there with the NFC East is one of the most competitive divisions, if not the most competitive division in the NFC and maybe in the entire NFL. We've got to win the division to even think about playoffs, and I think we can contend. We shocked the league last year on the season opener to go up to Atlanta. Dirk cut his first game as a head coach, and he beats his former team. Shocked the world, and Atlanta runs the table, basically, and makes it to the Super Bowl. But, yeah, playoffs, it's not playoffs or bust. You know, this is there's going to be another year and another year and another year. The NFL is not going to go away. But I think the team is getting closer and closer to breaking that bubble and making it to the playoffs. I mean, you know, I'd like to broadcast a game in early January instead of watching on TV.
Well, I tell you something, Gene. One thing for sure, we're going to have a lot of fun when we have that game, because I know the ball is going to be flying through the air an awful lot in that one. There's no question about that one.
How about this? The Bucs play both New York teams this year. We play the AFC East, so that means we get the Jets, and we get the Giants, so we get both of them.
Cool. Well, we'll see. Like I said, we'll enjoy visiting with you, and I hope to definitely shake your hand when we have that game. Let's get to the Florida State Seminoles, our topic of the day, as we break down draft prospects heading into the selection process.
Right.
You know, everybody that we met out in Indianapolis wanted to talk about Cook, the running back, but there were some who liked him a heck of a lot more than others. There does seem to be somewhat of a mixed portfolio when people look at him as an NFL running back. Give me a thumbnail, your perception of what you're hearing and also what you think it should be.
Well, you know, the people that have seen Dalvin Cook carry the football at the level that the Seminoles compete in are the ones that like him. The ones that have read about him or maybe seen some video on him are probably the ones that say, I don't know if he's quite. I'll just say this. He's the best running back that I have seen at Florida State, and I've been doing Florida State football for 38 years. I go back, Greg Allen was the first great back. He didn't make it in the national football game in the league. Sammy Smith was the next great running back at Florida State because of his speed and his size. He was drafted first round by the Miami Dolphins, had some problems, had some fumble issues, and didn't last long in the league, I think 4 or 5 years. And then along, fast forward, I mean, we've had a lot in between. Travis Minor comes to mind. Warwick Dunn comes to mind. Warwick Dunn, Dalvin Cook was the all-time leading rusher in the history of Florida State football. And he played 4 years at Florida State. Dalvin Cook played 3 years at Florida State and surpassed every one of Warwick Dunn's records, season records, career records, and became the first ACC running back in the history of the league, it goes back to 1953, to rush for over 4,000 yards in just 3 seasons. That's a tremendous accomplishment.
Yep.
When I see Dalvin Cook run, there's another kid from the same town that Dalvin's from, same high school, Miami Central. His name's Devontae Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
Devontae Freeman was not a first-round pick, not a second-round pick, but if you watch the Atlanta Falcons play football, he's involved in the entire thing, running the football, catching the football, scoring touchdowns, a tremendous steal for the Falcons, and I hate like heck playing the Falcons every year and seeing Devontae Freeman do his thing. put Devontae Freeman right there at the top of the list as running backs in the NFC South, and I'll tell you right now, Dalvin Cook is a better running back than Devontae Freeman. Now, that means he's a potential first-round pick. Whoever gets him is going to get a scoreboard changer. Jimbo Fisher has said this about Dalvin Cook. He said he is a guy that changes scoreboards, the potential every time he touches the ball. Just ask the Miami Hurricanes. Ask the Florida Gators. In big ball games, Dalvin Cook played like the best football player in the history of the game. He just rises to the occasion. There's no big game too big. Without Dalvin Cook, Florida State does not finish eighth and beat Michigan last year in the Orange Bowl. He had two huge plays, a third down conversion, third down and I think 17, and he scoots out left side, gets a swing pass, and gets a huge gain that set up a scoring touchdown. Against Miami, his catch and run for a touchdown gave Florida State their 20th point in the ball game, and we were able to survive 20-19. In big ball games, Dalvin Cook plays like the best player in football. I'm telling you that right now. The second thing now, for those people that don't think he is a pro running back, try to catch Quicksilver, okay? You can't do it. I have never seen a running back that can change direction without slowing down. That's Dalvin Cook. You see him running one way, he changes direction without missing a beat. If he runs a 4.440 or 4.5, whatever it is, he's running 4.4 and 4.5, changing direction. And that's a tough guy to tackle.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Jade, if he's anything like what you're saying on a week-in and week-out basis, you're right. Someone's going to be very happy to get him in the first round.
Yeah, and I guess, Gene, my follow-up question to that, there are three knocks that I've heard on Dalvin Cook, and I'd like to see if you think they're legitimate or if you think they're overblown.
Mm-hmm.
The three knocks I've heard is one that we talked about right before you came on, where his combine numbers weren't where you wanted them to be. But like I said, I watched a few games this year yesterday after we found we were going to have you on, and I get it. He kind of glides. He's not a big cutter. Fine, whatever. But the other two are pass protection and ball security. Do you buy those knocks, or do you think those have been overblown by people?
Well, you know, he had one bad game in his career, and that was against the Oregon Ducks in the college football playoff semifinals. And he had a huge gain and fumbled the ball. He had one more fumble in the ball game, but that wasn't the reason why the Seminoles lost that ball game to Oregon. Marcus Mariota had a lot to do with it, but that was the one bad game that Dalvin had. What was he, a sophomore? Maybe as a freshman. But what he has improved on this year, now I don't know about pass protection, okay? I do know this is a tough kid. If you grow up in Miami, you're a tough kid, okay? But I saw him in practice. I saw him in scrimmages, and he looked adequate in pass protection. They run a lot of blitz packages and scrimmages to put pressure on particularly DeAndre Francois, who was a young quarterback, so they threw an awful lot of stuff at him. And Dalvin had to pass protect for him. The quarterback sack numbers that the Noles had last year, that may be another reason why you might say that pass protection by a running back. I think we were like 106, Florida State, I'm saying, was 106 in the country in sacks allowed. But we had, I don't think we started the same offensive line in maybe two games in a row last year. And so that was an issue. Secondly, a freshman quarterback seeing his first real action in a college football season, that contributed to it. And I don't think it was necessarily a lack of pass protection by running backs. It could have been scheme. Dalvin ran an awful lot out of the shotgun, and you are called on to do a little pass protection, but not very much a lot of shotgun stuff. And it's a pro scheme that Jimbo Fisher runs, and NFL scouts have been very, very happy with the offensive talent that has been drafted by Florida State. I know this, the Bucks were ecstatic that they had a chance to draft Jameis Winston, and they're very pleased with his production and how he has developed as a quarterback. And it's the same thing these guys play a pro system with Florida State. They're ready to pass protect. They're ready to catch the ball. The one thing I saw out of Dalvin this past year that we didn't see in the first 2 years, he has become a tremendous receiver out of the backfield. So he can do it all. Let's wait and see who drafts him. Cleveland's got two picks in the first round. They need a quarterback. They need a running back.
Yeah.
I hope Dow. Here, Bill Parcells, and I've heard this quote before attributed to Bill, maybe Bill Belichick, the guys that have been around the business for a while. And Dave Moore, that I broadcast Buccaneers games with, he uses this on a regular basis. Your best ability is your availability. And Dalvin Cook missed one ball game, to my knowledge, and that was because of a hamstring, and they rested him because we had a rivalry game coming up the following week. I think he could have played in that game. Dalvin Cook stays healthy for a running back. That's tough to do.
No, hey, durability is a really, really big deal. We know all about that because Eli Manning at the quarterback spot has been incredible here for the Giants.
Yeah.
I got to ask you, Gene, as a guy who I particularly have my eye on for the Giants, he is on my radar, has been all season long. I'm thinking second, maybe third round, left tackle Roderick Johnson. I want some of your thoughts on him because I think he's going to make somebody very happy, at least at the very beginning, a reserve, if not compete for a starting spot.
Yeah, the Seminole offensive linemen have had good success in the National Football League, and Rod Johnson, Big Rod is his nickname, and I think you're right. He was probably going to be late first round, early second, but for some reason the numbers aren't there, or maybe combine or something, but I see him being projected maybe as early as late second round, but third round I think you're spot on. And he's a big guy, big physical guy, and that's what you need to be in the National Football League. And he'll get bigger, he'll get stronger, and I think as maybe not initially as a starter, but then obviously if you're not drafted in the first round, they don't expect you to start
sure.
the offensive line. Heck, we've got the Buccaneers have a starting guard, left guard, Kevin Pamphiel. He was a college free agent, but he's starting in the National Football League. So those stories are there. You don't have to be drafted first round to make it as an offensive lineman in the National Football League. But Big Rod Johnson, I'll tell you, he's and Marquez White. Keep an eye out. This is a young defense. He's a defensive back from Dothan, Alabama, and became a starter 2 years ago. And Tavares McFadden led the nation last year. He tied for the lead with eight interceptions, I think of it. And I don't know why they didn't throw the other way. There's a reason why they weren't throwing toward Marquez White's area 2 years ago in his first year as a starter. One of the companies that do all kinds of stats on this thing and that thing, and I don't know where they get the information, how they do. I'm still trying to figure out how to do a computer, but Marquez White was the least targeted cornerback in the in college football, or among the top two,
wow.
because nobody wanted to throw his way. I saw him play basketball for 1 year, and he had
that.
Tremendous basketball skills, tremendous defensive player, very quick. And Jimbo Fisher told him, if you concentrate on football, you're going to be a first-round draft pick in the National Football League. So he dropped basketball, and for the last 3 years has played football exclusively. And I think somebody's going to get a gem of a defensive back at Marquez White.
Gene, he's only 5'6", though, so to me that limits him to slot, and I don't see any way in the world that 5'6" he's going to play outside unless I've got a typo on my sheet.
He's got to be taller than 5'6". Come on, he played basketball. He's at least 6 foot.
Let me
maybe
see
5'11".
Here.
I got 5'11 and 6 inches on Marquez White.
Okay,
that's
see
what I have here.
Yeah, the sheet I'm looking at says he's 5'6". So good. I'm glad to hear that that's wrong, because that would significantly limit his possibilities.
Well, if he's 5'6".
It's not Lance Meadow out there.
Hold on one second. I've got, here's Big Rod. Right.
Big
Sean
Rod,
McGuire,
6'6".
Travis Rudolph, a wide receiver. Freddie Stevens, fullback. DeMarcus, we talked about DeMarcus Walker now. Led the nation in sacks last year as a senior, a four-year player, a three-year starter. Marquez White, I've got him 6 foot, 184. Senior Dothan, Alabama, Northview High School.
Okay, so
I don't know where that 5'6" stuff comes from.
It's obviously a typo on the sheet that I was looking at. But here, let me ask you this. What is his length and his leaping ability? Because it's important if you're going to play outside in this league to be able to have the length and the opportunity to knock a ball down out of the box against some of these bigger receivers.
Well, I'll say this. You don't start at Florida State in the backfield for 2 years unless you can play football.
Yeah, that's true. That's
that.
True.
No, I can't give you his vertical. I'll tell you who can. Jimbo Fisher. The most amazing thing about Jimbo Fisher is his knowledge and his memory. He can spout off vertical jumps, bench press, squats, boom, 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 for every player on his team. I've never worked with a head football coach that could do that. And when I go to record Jimbo's pregame show on Wednesday, and I put my depth charts out for the opposing team or for our team and my matchup stats, he looks it all over and he'll tell me, he says, Gene, this guy's 10 pounds heavier than what you got him. And this is the other team now. And it's just amazing, and maybe that's why Jimbo's the most successful coach in the last
Oh, I love
years
that. That's great.
But I'll tell you this. Marquez White doesn't start 2 years unless you can play football.
Okay, that's
right,
fair.
You know what? And Gene, you mentioned, and we're joined by Gene Dekaroff, play-by-play for Florida State and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You mentioned DeMarcus Walker, so let's go there next.
Yeah.
I watched a couple games of his, too. It's funny. He seems like more of that quote-unquote power defensive end. He doesn't seem to have that, super explosive off-the-edge, beat-you-around-the-corner thing. But he has some great inside swim moves. They move him into tackle a lot in passing situations to rush inside. He seems like one of those more, base defensive ends that's going to stop the run well and then rush from the inside on passing situations.
Well, ACC Defensive Player of the Year, and he—you know what—he did not play that right edge rush position.
He played left.
He played that left side, yep, where you're always up against that big, big tackle,
yep,
that they're going to run the power game at you. You know, mm-hmm. So not only was he able to play that position and effectively, you know, handle the rush and the big offensive line blocking and the pulling guards and all that stuff, but and get pressure on the quarterback, but he also was pretty good dropping back into coverage on zone blitzes and batting balls down. No Seminole will ever forget that he blocked the point after touchdown with a tie of the game with the Miami Hurricanes, and that won the ball game. That was the block at the rock, is what we're going to call it forever. But he came up with big plays against Florida, 3.5 sacks his junior year. Those are the kind of games that DeMarcus Walker was a leader on this football team. He was the guy that went and knocked on his teammate's door at 10 o'clock at night and said, "You better shape up, or I'm going to take care of you." You know, Derrick Brooks used to do that when Derrick played for the Florida State Seminoles. You didn't want Derrick Brooks knocking on your door, your apartment door, at 9 o'clock at night because he had something on his mind and he wasn't in a good mood. That was DeMarcus Walker. He was a leader of the defense, a leader of this football team. Could have come out a year early, but decided to stay for one more year, and thank God he did, because he was the cornerstone the defense was built around last year.
Last one from me, Gene. You got three wide receivers coming out, and it's odd. The last couple of years, I feel like there's probably been more defensive players coming out of Florida State than offensive. Just thinking back, I haven't looked at the actual numbers. That's my impression. But a lot of offensive players this year, including three wide receivers, a couple of smaller guys, that, you know, 5'8", 5'9", and Whitfield and Wilson, and then a bigger guy in Travis Rudolph. Give us the lowdown on these three guys, and who do you like the best out of the three?
Well, every team should have a guy named Kermit, and every team should have a guy named Bobo, you know? that's Bobo Wilson, Kermit Whitfield, and Travis Rudolph. Travis, the only one of those three that's coming out early. He had one more year of eligibility. I think the first two, obviously Kermit Whitfield, the fastest guy on the team, he does bring speed, and NFL coaches love speed. Probably a slot receiver, maybe a primarily a special teams player. He played both in kickoff coverage and kickoff return, and as a Florida State Seminole, scored what proved to be the winning touchdown. Well, not the winning touchdown. The winning touchdown came with 13 seconds to go, but scored the touchdown that gave Florida State the jolt that it needed to beat Auburn for the national championship of 2013, 100-yard kickoff return. And I could still see him running to the left side of the field, got a block, and boom, down the sideline for a touchdown. Knowles got it close, then scored the winning touchdown late when Jameis threw the ball to Kelvin Benjamin for the it's caught touchdown Florida State for the winner. But Kermit Whitfield, well, I think he'll get a shot because of special team skills and his speed. Bobo was a tremendous punt returner. One thing about Bobo Wilson, he didn't drop the ball in punts, and that's the first thing the special teams coordinators look for. He can feel the punt. He doesn't let it bounce and you know, get 10 of those hidden yardage over his shoulder and let it roll dead, you know, 10 yards behind him. He makes the catch and gets it in play. So I think he has an opportunity there. Again, not very big. Travis Rudolph, don't know. I think Travis should have stayed one more year, in my opinion. But he feels like he can play at the National Football League. He was a 5-star prospect coming out of high school, 2-year starter for the Florida State Seminoles, 50 passes in that range the last 2 years. I hope he makes it in the National Football League. I don't think he'll be a very high draft pick, somewhere mid-range. He may go undrafted. I don't know. But he wants to play in the National Football League, and if you want to, you got the tools and the ability, by golly, go ahead and take a shot for it. I wish Travis well.
I've got one more for you, Gene, before I close it out. And, you know, you could probably tell when I asked about an offensive lineman before, I love the power running game, which means you got to have a fullback. And Freddie Stevenson, I think, is a late third-day pick, maybe even an undrafted free agent, because, as you know, pure fullbacks are a dying breed. I mean, they played with Fred Flintstone. They just don't play in today's NFL anymore. But what do you think of Stevenson's opportunity to play in the pros?
Well, number one, he's tough, okay? He came into Florida State as a true freshman as a linebacker. And the Noles needed somebody to block, okay? And he says, okay, I'll switch to fullback. And it's you know, if he touches the ball maybe twice a game, he's a happy guy. And when he touches the ball, he gets you first downs or he gets you touchdowns. And that's what he brings to the table. He's got a huge heart. He wants to win. He's got the tools. He hangs on the ball. The fumble's not an issue. And, I like Freddie Stevenson. He's going to be a tough guy to replace for the Florida State Seminoles. He's a football player, okay? If you can play linebacker and fullback, there's probably a space on a football team in the National Football League that wants you and will pay you. And all you got to do is make that 53-man roster, and you're you're going to get a pretty big check every week, you know?
Yeah, and he's a good special teams player. That'll certainly
good,
help
him,
too.
He's a good guy, too. I mean, yeah. Let me say this about Florida State football players. They're good guys. I know Jameis got a lot of bad press, and it's still going around. It's still going around. Jameis Winston is a genuinely good man. And one day, maybe all this baggage that he has to carry with him is going to fall by the wayside, because he's proving on the field, he's proving in his community and to his teammates, to his coaches, that he is one of a kind when it comes to being a professional athlete, not only from the football side, but from the other side, the ticket sales, the community relations. He's a guy that never says no. He never needs a reminder that he's got to appear at a school with some children and show them how to play football. Nobody has to drive him to that school. He goes on his own, and he stays as long as they want him to stay. He's a phenomenal individual, and I'm glad he's a Buccaneer quarterback. And I'm just delighted that I had a chance to broadcast games when he played for the Florida State Seminoles and now for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But most of the guys, in fact, I'll say every one of these guys are high-character guys that are involved in this draft this year for the Florida State Seminoles. And I think that's a testament to the program at Florida State. Now, I mean, I'm going to brag about FSU every chance I get, but you don't read about Florida State guys getting into trouble, and that's just the way it is. And Jimbo's had great success. But he had 9, 10 first-round draft picks in his first 7 years as a head coach at Florida State. Over a three-year period, we had 29 players drafted, which is a modern NFL draft record for a three-year period. Jimbo's got good football players that are good people and go on and reap some benefits of playing in I think, the best sport in the world, and that's pro football.
Gene, I'm just glad you and our producer, Dan, did not have a chance to talk before you came on the air. He's an Ohio State guy, and you guys would have argued for about 5 hours.
Well, yeah, Paul Keel's a good friend of mine. He broadcasts Buckeye football. And tell Dan this, too, that I was born in Warren, Ohio, and as a young man, I grew up wanting to be an Ohio State Buckeye. But I moved to Florida, thank God, and got that Buckeye stuff out of my system. And Florida State's had some pretty good success against the Buckeyes over the years. I go back to 1980, 1981, back-to-back wins, both played in the Big Horseshoe up there. And then I think down in the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans, I think we took them out to the woodshed once down there. So, yeah, we've had some pretty good success against Ohio State. But hey, they got Urban Meyer up there now. You know, he's he's a tremendous coach. I'm glad he's at Ohio State, not at Florida.
Gene, great stuff. We appreciate the time.
Thank you, Gene.
And
all right, guys, have a good one.
We will talk to you in the fall when the Giants play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm sure.
That guy loves his job as much, if not even more, than I do.
I was going to say.
He is so jacked.
He's like you.
You know what I love about
it? Old, not technology, you know, savvy at all. Old school. I mean, you and Gene Deckerhoff, it's like, it's rare we can get somebody from your generation to bond with you on the air. That's what we just
did. It is so cool. And he's actually in his 70s. I'm in my 50s, and I hope. He is now one of, look. Springsteen has been my idol for years, folks, because of the energy and passion he brings to the stage, even in his 60s. Gene Deckerhoff is bringing it to the microphone in his 70s with as much zest and vigor as I hope to for the next 20 years. I love it. Shall we go?
Folks, that's my life in the next 20 years. Feel sorry for me. Two notes before we get to the calls at 201-939-4513. Dane Brugler, actually, as your boy Freddie Stevenson, is a fifth or sixth round pick, believe it or not.
Likes him
a lot. He says he's a good special teamer, and he's literally day one lead blocker fullback if you want him.
The problem is there's so little demand for that kind of guy now.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true. Though remember, in free agency this year, you saw two or three fullbacks get some money. DeMarco got some money. Red Ellison got some money, and I can't think of
Ellison,
the damn.
Yeah, but Ellison is a hybrid, though.
Correct, he is. And there was another straight-up fullback that got paid.
Was there?
And I can't think of the guy's name.
But here's the thing.
Who was the other fullback?
You know what? If you're a team that does want to have either a power running game or even a goal line short yardage back, Or for that matter, you think your halfback needs that lead blocker, mm-hmm. and maybe you've invested a lot of money in a pass-catching tight end, all of a sudden you bring Stevenson off the bench in those situations, and you've got yourself an extra piece of meat there to pound the ball in.
Extra piece of meat?
Beef. Extra piece of beef is what I meant to say, and I said meat, and I apologize.
That's okay.
But an extra piece of beef to pound the ball in.
Kyle Juszczyk. Jusek.
Yes.
From the Ravens, went to the 49ers.
That's true.
Jusek. So,
that's
he,
true.
So he got paid, and DeMarco got paid. So,
yeah.
Anyway, 201, one other note, too, on Roderick Johnson, because he didn't get into too much detail about him. Do you see him as more of a right tackle or
I
left
see him
tackle
as a left.
Along? The problem in
he's
this
a
is
technique guy.
Yeah, he's a bender though. They say he doesn't have great balance, and they say right now he's a much better run blocker. But physically, just looking at his traits, at 6'6", 298.
He's a left.
Physically, he makes you think left. The question is, does he play well enough to stay at left? If he can figure out some of his technical issues.
Well, that's why he's a maybe third round guy.
Well, correct.
And so now when you draft a guy like that, you say, look, we think there's a skill set there, but now technique is going to have to be worked on. And that's when you go to your offensive line coach and
right.
say, look, we're giving you a guy who we believe can do this, but you have to make sure he can do this.
Yeah, and Brugler has him as a third or fourth round pick.
Okay.
And he has him as a sixth ranked offensive tackle behind the top three guys, Moten and Garcia.
Yeah, well,
which is right in the range I think you would see him.
We've
landing.
Talked about him. Moten is about 330. I think that's where he's last listed. What do they got him at now?
They have him 319. That I think that was his combine weight.
Yeah, because
he's
a big man.
He's Creed McKenzie.
Yeah. And he is more of a right tackle
yes.
than he is a left tackle. But again, in my mind, John, and I think you're on board with me, we talked about the depth on the offensive line. They're gonna have to, in my mind, upgrade at least two spots on the depth chart of the offensive line.
I'd be fine with it.
Right?
I'd be fine with Roger Johnson's middle round pick. I agree.
Right? You good with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
You
I'm
know?
With you.
And
I'm no problem with that.
And so, you know, Moten's a guy I'm keeping my eye
yep.
on. Johnson's a guy I'm keeping my eye on. There's a few others.
And too. Garcia too, I think, is a potential future left tackle with his quickness.
You know, I got a feeling he's going to go higher than what we would say because there are people who want his athleticism.
Yeah, I wouldn't pick him in the second round.
And that's
I think,
probably where he goes.
And I think he'll be gone before the Giants pick in the
yeah.
third.
Yeah,
I agree
so
with you on that.
I'm kind of moving him off the table for
I
me.
Think that's fair. All right, 201-939-4513. Our calls have been waiting patiently, so let's get to it. Dash in Ohio has been on since the show opened. So, Dash, you have the floor, my friend. Thanks for holding on.
How we doing, John? What's going on, Bob?
Hi.
What's up, Dash?
How we doing? We're getting closer and closer to the NFL draft. Many, as far as Jonathan Hankins not being signed by the draft, they're possibly the Giants taking someone in the first, second, or third round for a replacement of Hankins. And if so, is there a possibility that they still re-sign them after the draft because he's still available?
Well, Dash, how about this? I think even if they re-sign Hankins before the NFL draft, I still think there's a chance you take a defensive tackle in the first three rounds because to me, at this point, I would say it's probably more likely than not if you do bring Hankins back, it'll probably be on a one-year deal. That would be my guess because he's going to want to try free agency again. And in that case, if you want to draft a defensive tackle in round two or three to plan for the future and, by the way, also rotate because you want a defensive tackle to rotate with Hankins, with Snacks Harrison, I wouldn't have a problem with that either, to be quite honest with you.
I'm with John on this. I don't think Hankins being here necessitates you putting an defensive lineman off the board. I think it's not unquestionable for me. It's not out of the realm of possibility that they take either a defensive end or a defensive tackle within the first three picks. It could happen.
Of course.
Okay. And what names are out there as far as possibly fitting that three check scheme with the Giants as far as in the first three rounds? Some names that possibly look out for in the first three rounds as far as defensive tackle, defensive end.
Well, one guy, honestly, and again, he would be more of a defensive tackle in sub packages, and we just talked about him, is DeMarcus Walker.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that can move into the. He would probably be a 4-3 defensive end on first or second down to stop the run. Then he can mm-hmm. be a pass rusher on third down. Caleb Brantley's a bigger guy, but he's somebody that has been mocked into the first round by some people. Obviously, Malik McDowell, the defensive tackle, is another guy that people have talked about
I
in
like
that
McDowell.
Spot.
I like McDowell, by
and
the way.
To me, McDowell,
really
McDowell's like a Canty type. He's very big, very long, very tall. He's not like a plotter. He can penetrate a little bit. Chris Wormley is a guy out of Michigan. He's more of your classic, you know, one tech, you know. Actually, he was a guy that played defensive end in Michigan, excuse me. And he's a guy they think will project
he's gonna move inside.
To defensive tackle in the NFL. I was thinking of the other Michigan defensive lineman there for a second.
What I like about Wormley and McDowell is their length, you know. And for me, That's like an added bonus because that means a guy who, whether or not he's coming from the edge or whether he's coming from the front side of the windshield, if he's got length, That means he doesn't necessarily have to get there to affect the play, because he's got the length, he's got the ability to get up, and he's got the ability to get that hand in somebody's face and knock a ball down. You can, you know, you can have value just by doing that, even if you don't get to the quarterback. So those two guys are interesting to me.
All right, appreciate it, John. That's all I had.
Thank you, Dash. Appreciate the call. And, you know, there are some bigger guys, too, that'll project more as that one technique, and those guys will probably go a little bit later. It's not a super-duper deep defensive tackle draft. That was last year. Last year you
last
had the defensive
better.
Tackles going into the fourth round where we were
last
shocked. Remember those two kids from Alabama lasted to like the middle or end of the second round? A lot of people thought they might be first-round picks last year. So
you probably have three rounds this year of solid defensive tackle prospects. But in general, the defensive line is deep.
Yes. Well,
in general.
It's a good, frankly, it's a good defensive draft everywhere.
Yeah. Inside linebacker, not so much.
Just because they don't come out anymore.
No.
There's just not a lot of them. And you're right. If you were to put one or even traditional 4-3 outside linebacker, like, so let me rephrase that. It's deep everywhere except for 4-3 linebackers.
Okay.
Is that fair?
That's fine.
Is that fair?
That's fine.
Okay.
I got no problem with that.
It's deep at safety, deep at corner, deep on the D-line. 201-939-4513. Jay's out in England, Dan. Let's go to line three. I want to make sure Jay's on that long distance. I want to make sure I get him in. Hi, Jay.
Hey, what's going on? It's on the government's dime. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Thank you, Parliament. What's up, Jay?
Hey, so the last time I talked to you, Paul, I want to say it was in the beginning of February, and I told you, I said, I watched the tape, I looked at P. Ryan, and I said, before the draft, he's going to jump up on Mayock's board. He's probably going to be fifth on that list.
And he was.
And where is he at? He's fifth right now.
He is.
So I'm not going to tell you, Paul, to stop talking about your guys, but, John, I'm just going to ask you to do me a favor. Next time he starts talking, just cut the mic.
Okay. You know what? I'm not going to cut his mic. I'll just give him a little jab in the ribs. How about that?
Yeah, that's fine, because I'm tired of seeing the guys that we like, that Paul likes, and they're gone. They just jump up the board.
Now, Jay, unfortunately, Paul even said this at the time. He feared that P. Ryan would be a second-round pick for somebody, and I don't know. I don't know if I would pick a situational running back with the second-round pick. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Piron's not a good enough player to be a second-round pick. I'm just not sure it fits with what the Giants want and need. I'm kind of on the fence with that, to be honest with you.
I would counter, and this is why I would still think about it in round two. I wanted him in three.
Like I said, I'm on the
fence.
But I would
think about it, and I'm going to try to pull you off the fence.
Okay.
Because there's certainly a need for a power back in this system. And the power back is the guy who's going to keep the chains moving on short yardage.
And score touchdowns.
And he's the guy who's going to score and help you in the red zone.
And that's a big one. I agree.
Those are big, big factors that the Giants have not done great at the last several years.
But the question is, even if you have that big, big back on the goal line, I still think he's going to need the help of the offensive line. Because P. Ryan's not going to go out there and make two or three guys miss on his way to
no,
the end zone.
No, but
he's not.
But what he does do really well
is break arm tackles.
Yeah, he doesn't go down with the first hit.
I agree.
He does not go down at the first sign of contact.
I agree.
He's a real plugger.
I
love the kid.
He's small, compact.
Yes, he is. He's like a little fire hydrant.
Exactly, like low center of gravity, and he's not afraid to run between the tackles.
And let's not forget, the Giants' O-line should be improved this year. We're thinking it's improved. We're thinking.
Right.
We got to see it.
The improvement is not coming from new players, though. The improvement will be coming from younger guys playing better.
Fluker. That's a new guy.
I mean, he might not be a starter, though.
Maybe. We don't know.
No.
And that's kind of loose to my first, what I really want to talk about, and I'm going to make it real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
It doesn't seem like the Giants are going to be – it seems like they're set in their ways with the line that they have now, right? So I know Charlie in Portland, Maine is probably kicking over a box of lobster right now. But they're probably comfortable where they're at with the O-line that they have. They'll probably bring in some depth in the later rounds. What I'm scared of and what I've seen, with especially the game with Green Bay, when DRC left the field, it looked like we were lost out there. I think we need to draft a safety. And I know we're happy with Darian Thompson and what he showed, but he had the injury bug. He was gone for the whole year, right? We have a rash of injuries at certain positions. It's usually like, remember that one year where we had a rash of injuries to all our wide receivers? I think we need to start filling those gaps, bringing in more talent. You said in the previous segment that it wasn't heavy on linebackers. Maybe we need cover linebackers in the first or second round. let's start adding these guys to the strength of the team in hopes to pull the weakness of the team, which is O-line and offense,
well,
and get us back in the Super Bowl.
Jay, I would say this. I would be more on board with drafting a corner than I think I would a safety, because I do think you can get away with having one really good safety in Landon Collins and having one okay safety. I think you can survive that. I think that's fine. But like you, if you lose, let's say, two of your top three corners, you're in a you-know-what load of trouble. That's going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. So if you want to use one of these first three picks on a corner, I'm cool with that, and I would be much better with that than I would using a top three-round pick on a safety.
I agree with John on that one. And I agree with you quickly. I've said this several times. I posted it online. In fact, a New York City newspaper criticized me for saying this on FAN. If Dominic Rogers-Cromartie does not get hurt and come out of that game, that Packers playoff game is gravely different. The Hail Mary pass does not happen, right before the half.
You wouldn't think.
And the second half, where he threw seven times, Aaron Rodgers threw seven times, I believe, for five completions and a couple of touchdowns at DRC's replacements, probably doesn't happen.
Here's the problem.
So I'm with you.
Here's the problem with that. And, Jay, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I agree.
All right, thanks, guys.
The game would have certainly been a lot closer.
A lot closer. I don't know if they would have won.
Because the offense still didn't exactly
and that's why
shower itself in gold.
I don't want to go saying that they would have won.
Yes.
But the game would have been dramatically different.
It would have been much closer. I agree with you.
And I do want to say one thing to you. As Jay was?
It was Jay, yes.
Jay, one more thing if you're still there. In talking about the offensive line, look at DJ Fluker's Twitter from yesterday. He posted an Instagram. He is working on techniques time.
He posted an Instagram on Twitter?
Well, you go to Twitter to get to the Instagram.
Oh, so it linked through to Instagram.
Right,
Look at you with the social media.
Well, because I don't have Instagram, so I would not be able to go to it directly anyway. But Fluker posted a link where he's working on technique, specifically footwork technique, with longtime NFL left tackle Willie Anderson of the Cincinnati Bengals, who must be running an offensive line school. And so Fluker, who's on a proven one-year contract, and is not allowed to do any work of that nature here, is doing it on his own with a guy who played a lot of games in this league and was pretty darn good at it. I think that tells you a little bit about who DJ Fluker is and what his mission is and what his point is in terms of coming here to make a point. I think it's a big sign. It's a good sign for me.
Well, it can't be a bad sign.
Can't be a bad sign, because I tell you what, Willie Anderson's not teaching them how not to play the position.
Right. There are plenty of guys who go to these camps, and they don't really improve that much, too. But again, it can't be a bad thing. It's good that the guy's going out there and trying to make
without
himself
a doubt.
Better.
So no take a look at his DJ Fluker the Warrior, his Twitter, and you can get a look at that. So
I will do that. Thank you. Mr. Social Media, Paul Patino.
No, Mr. Fluker Fan Club number one.
Well,
president.
Yes, you are one of the original founding members of the DJ Fluker Fan
Without
Club.
Without a doubt.
That fan club, much smaller than it was when he came out of college.
It is.
But Paul, much like that Titanic.
I am recruiting.
Paul is holding on to the deck chairs, and he is going down with the ship.
I am recruiting.
Hoping that they can plug the holes in the side of the ship and they can stay afloat. Paul's on board.
I'm looking for a big rebound year.
Paul's got the welding torch out. He's trying to seal the hole on the side of the ship.
That's
it. Trying to keep that thing floating.
And let's not kid ourselves. That would be a very good thing.
Oh, absolutely. And look, no one doubts his size, strength, and physical talent. So hopefully he can put it all together. 201-939-4513. Quite frankly, if it wasn't that situation, he probably wouldn't become available for the Giants.
No question.
Him. So that's just kind of the way it works. Let's go to Len. He's been holding the longest. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Hey, buddy.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
Good, good. Everything's good. Listen, quick kudos to ownership. Pretty much held the line on season ticket prices this year, up a very just a tick. Still a great value, and they hung on to that value pricing on the preseason games, which is was almost almost had to do 2 years ago. But I appreciate them doing that now. Saying that, you got to understand that a tick increase at my price level is a lot different than a tick increase on the 50-yard line.
Well, that's true.
50-yard line. So there may be some disagreement over there. But listen, that really, really good value. They've done a nice job with that first increase in 6 years, and hard to argue with that. Cool. Especially in the New York area. Let me show my giant bias, a little here.
Okay. good place for it, Len.
And probably sound a little angry in expressing my bias, but I know you guys can deal with me on this. Phil Sims knows more about football in his little finger on his left hand than Tony Romo knows
his
whole body.
That's not fair. Len, hold on. This guy was a successful quarterback in the league for 14 years. I'm not telling you Phil Sims doesn't know more because he's been around it longer, but to say he knows more in his pinky than Tony Romo, who, by the way, is one of the smartest quarterbacks in the league, that's a little insulting.
Yeah, that's quite a reach, Len. And I'm a huge. I mean, Phil Sims is my all time favorite
player. Trust me, no one loves Phil Sims more than Paul Dettino.
Yeah.
But that's a little strong.
I agree
with your larger point. I think replacing Sims with Romo was unfair to Phil because he's been doing it so long.
Yes,
and he does do work, and
Work.
Look, we are biased like you. We love Phil. I know Phil personally. He's a great dude. He's a fun guy. I like him. I think it's too much too soon for a guy like Romo who's never done it before.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with all that, but I think your statement was a little strong.
I think the one thing that Tony will have to really pick up on is how you do homework for a broadcast. All he knows right now is how to do homework to play.
And also willing,
and that's a big difference.
And willing to be critical. There's a lot of players when they first start, they don't like being critical of guys who are once their peers. Because what's the number one rule in the locker room? You don't criticize your teammates.
Correct.
And you don't criticize your peers. So you're right. And that's how you prepare differently. And different things are important to you broadcasting a game than they are preparing as a quarterback. So I think you're right. I think those are all things he has to consider.
And just in closing, it is terribly unfair to Phil, and I think it's also unfair to Tony to put him in that spot right away.
Now hopefully they
both guys, Len,
hopefully they find a good role for Phil. Maybe he'll be on the 2-team or the 3-team. Who knows? They'll figure that out. He has not been fired. Phil Sims' agent made that very clear the other day.
Correct.
He's still with the network, so hopefully we'll still see plenty of Phil Sims on CBS on the upcoming season in a very big role.
Aren't you guys glad that I gave you the opportunity to express your opinion on that topic?
Yes, we are. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
No,
give
it's
me,
true.
Give me, okay. All right.
I take it you agree.
I gave you a chance. Give me one more. Let me just say one more sentence on that.
Of course.
And Paul alluded to it. That smile is going to wear off in October when Tony figures out how much homework he's going to have to do. And how hard Sims, third and fourth hand on this, guys, worked on the homework part of that. And having to do it last year a little unfairly on the part of CBS, twice a week, preparing for national games, a little unfair. Okay, can I move on to something? Unless you want to respond to
Yeah,
that.
You know, I want to respond real quick. One more thing I'll say, too, which I think is going to make it even tougher for Tony Romo. He's going to be doing mostly AFC games. The teams he know the best are in the NFC. So that's going to make it even a little bit tougher for him.
I really hadn't thought about that, and that indeed is a good point. Mm-hmm. Is a good point. All right. Can you see any position on the Giants this year, the starting 22? Can you see any position where someone from the draft can start on day one?
Offensive line?
Maybe tight end?
Tight end, offensive line, and then if Hankins doesn't come back, potentially defensive tackle, and maybe linebacker.
I'd say those are the four.
Yeah. Those are the four.
In fact, there's probably more than one at defensive tackle who could start on opening day. Did you say who said offensive line? John, did you say offensive line?
I did, yes. I think the guy you would think about with that would be either one of the top two tackles, or we're going to throw Cam Robinson there if you like him, the top three tackles. And then I think Forrest Lamp's the other guy that could step in day one and start.
I am not as confident. I don't think there are any plug-and-play offensive tackles in the first round.
No, I said maybe. I didn't say for sure. I think there's a chance one of those three guys can step in.
I do think that if you draft a plug-and-play first-rounder at linebacker or a defensive tackle, he probably does start week one.
Or tight end.
Wow. I'd agree with that also.
Okay.
I agree with that also. Then, if they're in a power package, Ellison's probably starting a tight end.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. I would have thought tight end or defensive tackle maybe safety if Darian Thomas, isn't ready to come back. I guess we don't really know about
That's
that.
That's a good point. That's a good point. No one's told me otherwise. I'm assuming that Thompson's going to be ready.
Who I'm high on at safety. He's never going to last at the Giants, and I'm hoping he doesn't last to the Redskins pick. I think they pick at 17. Is that fellow Hooker. He's a terrific player. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think both Hooker and Adams will be off in the top 10, so I would not worry about him being on the board for the Redskins.
No.
Well, that's indeed would be good news for that. okay, listen, getting ready for the draft, looking forward to it. Things are good. I'm feeling strong about this team. Everybody stay healthy. Get healthy, stay healthy, and I think things are going to be pretty good. I'm really pretty actually looking forward to the draft party. The season ticket holders get an invite. It's not really a party. You get out to go on the field and watch them make the first pick on the tell screen, but it's always a pretty good time. So,
hey, Paul Dottino is going to be there. That means it's a party.
Yeah.
Does it?
Okay. All right, man.
Wringing my hands with a ton of pressure, trying to figure out who's going to steal my guys. That's what I'm going to be doing.
Okay, guys, listen, thanks for taking my call. I'll catch you next time.
Thank you, Len. Appreciate it. Nothing makes me happier on draft day than when I get to send Paul a text telling him about a piece of information I just got, that somebody's going to take the guy that he wants ahead of the Giants. Like, Dan Salmon's been with me at the draft before. He knows the grin on my face when I got the text, Paul. I'm trying to think. Was it 2 years ago?
Well, how about last year?
No, it was 2004.
When Conklin was taken.
Yeah, well, last year, Conklin.
That killed me.
And I did get to send you that text
with
the big smile on my face.
And I was nauseous.
That Conklin was going to be gone, and I was right about that.
And, of course, when Sheriff was taken.
Sheriff, that was another one. And then
Zach Martin.
And did Lawan go before the Giants or no? Did he
no,
go
I didn't.
After?
I was not a Lawan guy.
That's right, which he ended up being a pretty good player, to
he
be honest.
He has become
you.
A pretty
yes,
good player.
Yes, and Sheriff. But I didn't know Sheriff was going to go to the Redskins. I was surprised by that. I didn't tell you about him. That one caught me by surprise.
Well, you might as well have, because you love sticking that knife in and twisting it every time one of my guys gets taken off the board.
I just like to count how many letters and letters in capitals in text and how many exclamation points he sends back to me.
It's never fun.
I wish you would learn to use emojis, because I feel like I would get an even better response from him if you like did it in the emojis.
What I need to do now is tell all of the NFL personnel people out there that I like guys who are hurt. I like guys who are hurt, who can't play, and boy, they're so great, they're so wonderful. Pick them.
You are a terrible evaluator. That is true. 201-939-4513. Shakes is in Baltimore. Hey, Shakes. Long time no speak, brother.
What's going on?
Hey, brother? Shakes.
How are you?
What's going on? I got a few things here.
Sure. Rattle them off. What do you got?
I got to end it off with a question for y'all.
Cool. Go ahead.
But, all right. First thing is the safety thing that the other caller had brought up.
Yes.
I'm
safety
totally
or corner?
With y'all. I think that we just need a cornerback. I think we are good at safety because I'm very high on Adams. And then I really like Raheem Moore that they brought in the offseason as well. So with those two guys, and then probably go an undrafted safety or something like that to, fulfill the roster or give them a shot.
That'd be fine.
But I don't think we draft a safety. But this is what I really call for, is Dalvin Cook. Now, I'm with you, P-Dot. Like, I want the power back. I want to get back to hard-nosed football. That's Giants football.
I'm waiting for a butt, though, Shakes. I feel a butt coming.
Yeah, of course. But here's the thing. When you got a talent like Dalvin Cook that just falls to you at 23, you don't walk. You run to the podium.
Shakes, if Fournette drops, would you rather have him or Cook?
Oh, my God. See, I've been gone too long. Y'all don't know, but I'm gonna let y'all know. I am so huge on Fournette. This is how huge I'm on Fournette. Okay,
see? And I'd rather have Fournette over Cook too.
Y'all
obviously,
gonna think I'm crazy because they get on me on the shakedown. Yeah, shout outs. But they get on me on there. I would actually trade up to get Leonard Fournette.
Oh boy,
I would actually trade up. and I would trade a third and a second round next year. But that's a whole other argument. That's a whole other argument.
Would you trade up for one of the two tight end shakes? Would you do that for Howard and Njoku? How about that?
I really like Howard. I don't know if I would trade up for Howard. Maybe a few slots. Like if he was at 18 and we made a call and it was possible for us to trade up to 18 to get Howard, I would love that.
Well, Shakes, how about this?
I would love that we did something like that.
I will give you a different scenario. We know the Browns like to gather draft picks. Let's say the Browns get up at number 12, O.J. Howard's sitting there, and they say, in order to get the selection, New York Giants, you need to give us your second-round pick this year, you need to give us your third-round pick next year, and then like a 6 or a 7 next year. Would you do that?
For O.J. Howard?
Yes, sir. To move up 11 slots in the first round.
Boy, I would really think about that.
I think that's a fair trade.
I would really think about that. But you see,
Fournette is off the board, right?
Yeah, Fournette's off the board.
Because the other thing is, if Howard gets picked there, you might just say, okay, you know, I'm going to sit back and try to get into the teens and try to get Njoku. You could do that too and probably, you know, get him for a heck of a lot cheaper.
Paul, I've never seen you so excited to potentially trade up. This is the most excited I've ever seen you in a draft wanting to trade.
Well, you know, we haven't done these off-season shows until what, about 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah, 4 years ago.
And the Giants haven't been this close to being a true Super Bowl team in that time span.
I agree with that.
What I keep saying, it's like to me, and they kill me. But again, we don't have a lot of holes to fill.
See, Shakes, time out. Before you say anything else. I'm glad you now understand what we occasionally feel like when the masses decide that they're going to follow some crazy web story or some newspaper story and they want to kill us. I'm glad you now understand what that's like.
I feel your pain now.
Thank you.
They get on me, man. But, I mean, seriously, though, we got little few holes. Like, right now is the time where we can go all in and try to win the Super Bowl.
Oh, that's dangerous.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, you can trade up. I mean, you can't sit here and say, okay, so right now we got 6 draft picks. We can't afford to lose one because we don't have that many holes. So we can lose one of those draft picks. Maybe it's high. Maybe you don't want to give up that pick. And that's fine.
Now, Shakes, hold on.
That we're screwed if we do something like that is asinine.
Now, I'm not saying you're screwed if you do it, but I will play devil's advocate for a second.
You better be
right. I am not wrong. I am not necessarily against. If the right deal comes along, you want to trade up to get somebody, it better be a specific player at a specific position that you need. Okay, that's number one. The number two, remember though,
O.J. Howard.
But remember, the impact of the picks you trade to move up are not going to be felt this year. They're going to be felt in 2018 and 2019 and 2020. So I get it. You're worrying about the window with Eli Manning. Completely agree. No argument from me on that. But you will feel this pain from trading the extra picks in a couple years. That's all I'm saying.
Shakes, let me tell you something. You get a Super Bowl ring, that pain could take 10 years to go away. It doesn't matter.
But here's the thing.
Win the ring, baby.
There's no guarantee. There's no guarantee.
There's never a guarantee.
We're on the same wave.
What's your final question, Shakes?
And I don't think we will be hurt because we still, like, in 2 years, we have what? Should be like 13 picks. I'm just saying, like, if there's no way that one pick that we trade away is going to shut us down from keep on progressing and keep on trying to win Super Bowls. And I'm saying we got an opportunity to win now, so let's try to win now. A few other things before I get to the question.
Yeah, real quick.
Yes, DJ Fluka. Now, P-Dot, I remember this because this is when I first started to call in the show. And I wanted Alec Ogletree bad. And this the whole show when we drafted Pugh. I said, what are we, allergic to linebackers?
I remember it well. I was high on Ogletree also.
Yeah, but you were very, very high on DJ Fluka.
Yes.
And I didn't want no offensive lineman because I said he was one-dimensional. He was a run blocker. And I wanted Alec Ogletree. Well, I'm on your bandwagon now because I love Fluker, and I followed him ever since he came into the league. I followed him because I wanted to see how Ogletree did. I wanted to see how Fluker did. I wanted to see how Pugh was going to do. And I followed him in the first two seasons at tackle. He did very well. Very, very well. Then they changed him to a guard, and he kind of declined. And then they didn't want to pick up that extra option money, and then they cut him in this offseason. But I'm telling you right now, and I'm telling all y'all Giant fans, y'all going to love Fluker. A lot of y'all going to eat crow on him. I'm just letting y'all know.
All right,
and
what's
I'm
your next point?
I'm eating crow now, P-Dot. I'm on the bandwagon, DJ Fluker.
Let's go. A lot of pressure.
And the last thing I wanted to say was my question was, why don't we make trades? I mean, why don't we do it? I see every other team doing it. Every other team in our division is doing it.
You mean
it.
Draft
the
day
Patriots
trades?
Is doing it.
Draft
the
day trades?
Is doing it.
Are you talking draft day trade shakes, or are you talking about like player for player trades?
I'm just saying trading, period.
Okay.
We don't make no trades at all. When was the last time we made a trade? Was Beeson?
No, Brad Wing.
Brad Wing.
Wing,
come on,
Beeson. They traded up draft picks, you know, when
Landon
they went to get Collins, mm-hmm. when they went to get Nassib. Oh. I mean, they've done some things over the last six,
the
7 years.
The McManus trade.
Yeah, that's not fair, Shakes. That's not fair.
No.
They've made some transactions now.
Major
that's
ones, but they've made
trade,
transactions.
Man.
I leave you with this thought, Shakes. I leave you with this thought, okay? It is very dangerous for you to be agreeing with me on like 90%
correct.
Of what I have said here, because
very dangerous.
I can tell you, your shakedown people don't like me very much. So this means they're now going to throw their fire at you. So I warn you ahead of time.
No, we like you, P-Dot. It's just that you're very opinionated on how you feel, and you don't want to hear nothing else. And that's where it gets a little disagreeing. But otherwise than that, the Shakedown crew loves you. And we want you to come on the show, P-Dot. So come on, man.
Well, you let me know sometime. We'll try to do it before the season starts, okay?
All right, we'll do that.
That's a
man.
Promise, Shakes.
And
that's
for
a promise.
My call, y'all. I love y'all.
Thanks, Shakes. We love you too, man. Final call of the show. Let's go to Alan in Brooklyn. He wraps us up. Hi, Alan.
Hi, how you doing? I'll make this quick.
No, go ahead. It's fine. You got a second.
Okay. Well, first, y'all should have had the Florida State guy on Friday with Fagles, because that Miami Florida State outing would have been classic.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But the real reason I called was the linebacker call with JT Thomas. Is he still on the team, and what is his status?
He's rehabbing from his knee injury. He is still on the roster. Correct.
Okay. Well, that's it. I'll make it quick. Enjoy your day.
All right, you too, Alan. Appreciate it.
Okay.
You held that time. I told you to take
the
a minute.
The easiest
okay.
question we had to answer all day.
And then we're going to say goodbye.
Yes,
for Paul
are.
Dottino, we thank Gene Decker all for joining us from Florida State and Tampa Bay. We're going to go eat some lunch. It's cheesesteak bar day.
Oh, that's good.
Very exciting.
And fries.
They got fries
they
out there.
They got fries.
Too.
Thick steak fries.
It's a fat Thursday at the Giants facility. See, the players aren't in the back yet. When the players get back in 2 weeks, all this fun stuff's going to be over.
I know.
It's back to the grilled chicken.
And I love chicken, so it's okay
it's
with
fine.
Me.
For Paul Dottino.
Bye.
And our producer, Dan Salmon. I'm John Schmelt. Thank you, Gene Dekaroff. Great job by the callers. We'll see you tomorrow. Me and Fiegels, Giants.com. See you at noon.